Now, I don't know how many of you were on any of the learning communities that were done on Zoom. I had the privilege of being in, I think, in part of Gareth's. And you can't help but to be infected by what these guys believe in and what they're coming here to promote this morning. So you are in for a brilliant session today. So let me just introduce you guys to come up. So this is Imer and Gareth. Yeah, give them a big one. Woo! That was a little bit rubbish, if you don't mind me saying so. It's Gareth and Imer, people! Thank you very much.
Thank you. I have to say that is the warmest welcome ever. Thank you. So, welcome to our session. We're going to be looking today at family values. So, the Kitchen Table Project is a project all about equipping parents and carers to nurture faith at home. So, this is Gareth, and I am Imer. You know, with the pandemic, kind of don't want to say the word, but I'm going to. With the pandemic, lots of people have had to reevaluate things, and the things that have come through for a lot of people are the things that were non-negotiables that you couldn't do. So for parents and carers, obviously, you had to still look after your kids and you had to give them an education. So actually, we feel that this season has been really helpful for people to think, right, what is important? You know, and so in today's session, we're going to cover a little bit of what's important for parents and carers, what's important for like families of all different shapes and sizes, and also what's important for children for them to nurture, for them to have their faith nurtured at home. So I'd love today to feel a bit like a journey with us. We could be the captains. How exciting. I have actually got a captain's hat. So I want it to feel like a journey today. So we'll have this session and Gaz and I will be telling you a lot of different things. And then the next session is going to be questions and answers. So I really don't want you to be reserved. I want you to bring your questions and answers from the different things that we're going to say. Really, just ask. And then the last session that we're going to do today is put in all of the theory into practice, so we will get you engaged in that. So I'm actually going to start by telling you a tiny bit about our family, not Gaz and mine. In our family, this is what signifies love. So if my husband came home and bought me some of these, I would be like, oh, yes, because he knows me. So him doing that is him saying, do you know what? As a family, we want to be known. So when he brings me these jelly snakes, which I know it doesn't sound like the most romantic thing, but it says to me that actually I'm known. It says that I'm heard, because I don't want a bunch of flowers. Just so you know, as in case you have to say thank you ever, I don't want a bunch of flowers. But I do want jelly snakes. And in Gareth's family, only because I've asked him, it's not because I can speak for his family, but in Gareth's family, so for those of you that don't know, this is a rugby shirt. And so in Gareth's family, that signifies love, because he gets quality time, gets time with his daughter, they can watch the match together, they can make loud noises. I think that's what you do. So in this minute, I'd just love for you to turn to the person next to you just for 2 minutes and just say, you know what, in my family, like thinking of our values, you know, like for our family, it's really important to be known. So I want you to tell that person next to you what signifies love in your family. What's something? Right. I know that feels like not very much time, but I'm going to stop you there. So I'm going to stop you there. I love your families, but I'm going to stop you there. So I know. So feel free, like during the break times, to continue that dialogue. But actually, as well, for Gareth and I, like, feel free to continue whatever we engage in today, continue that dialogue with us as networkers. So that can be regionally, or we'll make sure we'll give you our details. But we want today to be the start of a dialogue.
Over to you. Great, sir. Thank you. Cool. Well, good morning. It's so good to see you. It's nice to be in the room. Like, I'll be honest, I was thinking this is probably the first time in about 2 years that in a work capacity I've spoken in a room, and I've actually been wearing jeans, not joggers, to be perfectly honest. and I've actually been wearing shoes and not anything else. Do you know what I mean? It's so good to actually be in the room together. And what's cool as well, with myself and Ima, we've been part of the team here. And Ima's first day with Care for the Family was actually the day before lockdown. So she got the job in the January and then lives up north and came down to our offices in Newport. And we were doing induction and it was going so well for 2 hours. We were learning about the project. We were spending time with her and our colleague Hannah, letting them know about the job they are stepping into. And then our CEO sent out an all staff email to basically say we needed to meet in the boardroom in 10 minutes. And we were like, this is not normal. And we all gathered in the room. And the first thing that our CEO said was, it's nice to see everyone, but everyone needs to leave the office in the next hour. And Ima had just come all the way down from Bolton, and she was like, what? So we had to leave. And so that was Ima's induction, was 2 hours, was actually getting to know the organisation. And then it got even worse. Then furlough happened, which we're grateful for. Then all of our team were made furlough. But because of the different rules and restrictions, Hannah and Ima, who had only just had 2 hours induction, was not allowed to be furloughed. So they were doing the job they didn't know anything about. And I was at home getting a tan because it was sunny, wasn't it? So it was great to check in with Ima and Hannah to check that they were doing the work they had no clue about. But thankfully, after a couple of weeks, they were allowed to be furloughed. But this is actually one of the first times we've got to work together, which is super, super exciting. But it's so good to be with you today. And like Ima said, this morning, the first session, this is actually a little bit more about us talking. But don't worry, the rest of the day is going to be actually a bit more interactive. But we wanted to lay a foundation of where we're going to build upon today. And we're talking about this whole idea of family values and actually what is important in the families' lives that we work with. And I understand that there are many different contexts represented in this room today. We work with many different families and in many different churches. So please don't think we're standing up here going, we have all the answers, or this is going to work and it's a one size fits all. It's not. But what we want to do is to try and open the conversation so actually we can start looking at our own families we work with in our own churches and go, okay, what can it look like? What does it look like? But we know, Ima touched on it, that in the last 2 years, can you believe it's been nearly 2 years? My goodness, I thought it was going to be done and dusted by Easter, to be perfectly honest. So much that I booked 3 summer holidays that year, but they were all cancelled, but hey. But it's been a crazy 2 years. But one thing we've recognised through the work we do and in our own families is, I think that many people in the last 2 years have started to ask the questions of, what is important in my life? And I think that's the case for both people who are believers and non-believers. I think there's an incredible opportunity for us as the church to reach people who don't know Jesus right now. Because suddenly, there's maybe questions. Suddenly we've been really confronted by death and grief on quite a regular basis. So many people are asking that question, what is important in my life? But that's the same for the families in our churches we work with. A lot of them right now have gone on a journey, gone, what's important in my life? And maybe the answer they've come up with is a little bit different to our answer. Maybe the families that were consistent 2 years ago, actually you haven't seen for the last couple of years. And that's the reality where we're at right now. But I think there's an amazing opportunity for us to come alongside families to actually look at how can we explore those questions of what's important in our life? What are the values that we hold high in our life? And we get the privilege to talk with churches right across the country on a daily basis when it comes to engaging with parents and equipping families. And the question that we get all the time is, how do we do it? And I understand. We want to always jump into the how. Give me a program that I can run which will equip my parents to share faith, and that is easy. But we know that life doesn't always work like that. And we believe that there is a how, and we will touch on that today. But I honestly think that so often we jump ahead to the how without actually considering the why. Why do we do this? Why are you in this room today? Because you may have jumped into this room today thinking, oh man, I'm going to jump into the how. We're going to get some really tangible ideas that I can take home to outwork in my community. And hopefully you will. But if we can only do one thing today, and it's actually to open the why, I think we've done our job personally. Because it's the why that sustains things. It's not the how. The how comes and goes. Events, provisions, courses are fantastic. But do you know what? There's only so many courses and so many podcasts I can listen to. They don't always change my life. But when I understand the why, when I understand why is it important, why, then that's what changes my life. And when we work with the parents and families in our churches, when we're talking about this whole idea of building faith at home, what's important in your family? Yes, we'll jump into the how, but it's the why I want to touch on very quickly. And there's two very simple questions that I ask parents and carers all the time, and I ask churches. When churches talk about the importance of children's ministry and family ministry and equipping parents, I go, that's fantastic. And they go, what course can we run? How can we outwork this? And we'll talk about that. But I always want to take people back a step to the why. And there's two very simple questions I would love you just to take hold of and maybe do with it what you want. But when we're working with parents in our church specifically, these two questions I think are so helpful. The first question to parents and carers is, why is your faith important to you? Because I can guarantee that you could do the greatest how, you could run the greatest provision, you could run the greatest courses and the greatest events, but if they don't answer that question for themselves, then they're not going to do much with it and you're going to get frustrated. Because there's a disconnect between what we're putting on and where parents are at. And we'll touch on the importance of parents in a moment. So why is your faith important to you as a parent or carer? And again, there's not a one-size-fits-all answer. And it's so wide-ranging. And this is not about judgment. This is not about shaming parents into a position where they're at. No, no, no. It's actually coming alongside and going, do you know what? Take a moment to ask that. And there's no wrong answer. But unless we can answer that why, then actually the reality is we're going to do very little. Then the second question is, why is it important that your child develops a faith that lasts? And that question is really important, and it goes alongside the first question. And what I love about that question is the second bit, is why is it important that your child develops a faith that lasts? What we get to do on a weekly basis as churches is not actually about the child today. It's actually about when they're an adult. We get to lay foundations. We get to sow seeds that actually sometimes don't take fruit while they're young. But we get to do this. But it's also adopting that same attitude and that same question to parents to go, why is it important that your child develops a faith that lasts? And I can guarantee. And why I can guarantee this is because up until I started exploring this, I never thought about those two questions. I just got on with life. Church was important, faith was important, but I never took a moment to go, why is it important that my child develops a faith that lasts? I get them to church, I pray for them, but why is it important? And those two questions, when we look at those two questions, and there's many more why questions, why do you do children's ministry? Why do you pray at the end? Why do you teach the Bible? Let's help our teams and our volunteers to explore that as well. Because if we just jump straight into the how without actually asking the why shares vision. The why lets people know where we're going. So I think it's really important to look into the why. And the who. We kind of touched on that, the who we work with. Right now, that looks completely different to what it did 2 years ago. But there might be a couple of families in your church. They're so precious that God can do so much. I always believe that nobody can reach the school mum on the schoolyard better than a school mum. No one can reach the 12-year-old in school better than the 12-year-old. So right now, who are the families in your church who you can equip, who you can disciple, who you can get along and create a safe space where they can grow and flourish? Because that's where you'll see discipleship. That's where you'll see growth. So never forsake what we've got right now. Because who knows, God may be stirring something in those hearts right now. So let's look at what we have and let's not look at what we don't have anymore. Let's not focus on even 2 years ago, because I feel that God is calling us into something new right now. God is calling us into the now today. Just keep an eye on time. We need to chug along. But what's important? We talked about family values. We've talked about that actually for many families, they're on this journey of exploring what's important for them. And that will look so different across families. And I've just popped this in, and I did a learning community a few months ago on God connection versus God smart and how we connect with God in different ways. And I can share about that another time. But why I popped this in is because so often we have the wrong goal in our families. And I don't mean that in a bad way, but we actually often have the goal is, as long as I get my child into church, then everything's going to be okay. But I'm just going to touch on in a moment a child's week. But the goal isn't getting our child into kids' church or Sunday school. The goal is actually seeing them connect with God in a loving way. It's actually them realizing that God is their father. And that happens on a Sunday morning. But it also happens on a Monday morning on the way to school. It also happens on a Friday evening after school when they're worried. So how can we help parents see that it's actually church and home? It's joining the dots between church and home. And this whole idea, Rachel Turner often talks about the whole idea of being God connected or God smart. When we're talking to our parents, when we're talking to our children, the goal is actually that they are God connected, not just God smart. God smart is knowing about him, but God connection is knowing him. And there's a slight difference, but do the parents and families we work with understand that difference? Because so often we just think we need to do stuff out of routine and familiarity, and it's all about creating a kind of a smartness and intelligence, and it's really important to have knowledge and understanding. But the goal in everything is actually relationship and connection. So it's helping parents and carers on that. And I'm just going to pass over to Iman now. We'll swing past that for time.
I wish we had like running gear, tag team. So the majority of people who come to faith do so before the age of 19. And I reckon there's, like, in your churches, most of the parents who are coming with their children have been sat in church with their parents. And so a large percentage of those do so before the age of five. So all the stuff that we do, like in preschool, if you do toddler groups, you know, and so all of that stuff that you do is really important. Thank you. Thank you for rescuing me when, like, the mornings were so long and you're like, oh, at least, right, quick. If we go to toddler group, I can have 5 minutes and try and have a cup of tea, which didn't really happen. But thank you for doing that. But actually, if you look at a child's week, especially in those years under five, there is so much time that children are with their parents than actually children are, like, in church. So if you think of all the provisions that you make, in that, if you look at this very, look at this chart, that tiny slither there is amazing church that you have invested lots of time, energy and effort in. But actually what we're saying is, yes, it does look like a small amount, but as children's workers, family workers, we can utilise some of that time to engage parents and get parents to feel equipped to actually do in all the other time that children are with parents. Like, we can get parents to feel equipped to be nurturing their children's faith during that week. So if you like statistics, anyone?
Yeah.
Oh. So we've actually got our research booklet, which has got all the statistics. So if you want that, I've got a few with us. And if you want the electronic copy, just like email us and we'll send that to you. So that's got loads of statistics, including that chart stuff. But parents and carers are the biggest influence on children. And, you know, that I'll tell you about the 421 years because it does look random. So if children were going to come to Sunday school and have the same amount of time with their parents as they have in the Sunday school provision, they'd have to go to Sunday school for 421 years. I know, 421 years. So, you know, for helping parents to step into nurturing their children's faith at home, it's not as easy as saying, do this. This is what you have to do. Because like Gareth was saying, and like your stories when you were all talking together, in our family, this is what love is. So all the families are so, so, so different. The best way for us to encourage parents is actually to start by understanding how parents feel and how they're feeling like now. You know, you're creating great provision, but before we set up the project, we did research to like ask parents, what are some of the things that you find difficult in sharing your faith? What are some of the things that get in the way? And you know, like I think of one of my friends. She's a single mum, and I know that she gets up at 6 a.m. to take 2 children to 2 different places. Then she goes to work to do her 35-hour week. And then she has to do hospital appointments. One of them's brilliant at football, so she got to do football. You know, she has to do a million things. So the last thing I'm going to say to her is, right, do you know what you can do? If you book an hour every morning, so get up at 5, you know, that's the last thing that I would say to her. And that's because I know that she has lots of restraints. But actually, for her, as she's on the way to, like, drop off first child, you know, if they just, like, catch a glimpse of, like, a bird in the sky and go, wow, how free is that bird? Oh, you know, what a blessing that we are free in this country to enjoy the God that we know. You know, just getting the little tiny bits in the everyday. So I was thinking, you know, sometimes you think, oh, can I actually do it? You know, can I as a children's worker nurture a child's faith? Can I encourage a family? Can I build relational connection and resource parents? And I'm like, yes, you can, because that's exactly what the Kitchen Table Project wants to do and is doing through our various resources. So let's get to these hurdles. I am not an energetic person, even though when I did do the video, I did it on a racetrack, which is very cool. So when we ask parents, what are these hurdles? You know, there's stuff in the way, we can get over them, what are they? So some parents said, not enough time. Some parents said, you know, they don't know where to start. Some parents said that they don't feel like a good enough example. And some parents said, you know, I'm totally not qualified. you know, and some parents just felt the fear of what if I actually do it wrong? And that sense of feeling inadequate. And then thinking of the pandemic, there are a few other things that have now crept in that parents have said, do you know what? I've got an increased sense of guilt. You know, if I don't know how many of you did homeschool, worked, made chicken another 55 different times. I don't know. You know, during the pandemic, there was so much to do. And still, and if you were involved in church, like, and if you had online provision, you had everything to do. So especially in that point of time, some parents were really like, oh, this is a little bit more than I can do. And some parents, you know, just were zoomed out. And some parents felt quite disconnected then and are still adjusting to getting back into church. And like Gaz was saying, some values in the family have changed for some, and Sunday morning service is not as high on the scale as it was. So for us, we think that actually to help parents to overcome these hurdles, you know, if they're saying, do you know what, we've not got time, like we as church community can just reassure them, right, it's okay. Like, reassure them, say, it is okay. Do you know what? There are the little bits in every day. You know, when you're doing your child's hair, you know, you can use that as a time. Like, I used to have my hair done, and it would take, we'd have to do it on a Sunday before Monday, and it would take about 20 minutes. So I would be sat on the floor for 20 minutes having my hair done, which was a ritual that we did every single week. And actually, it's helping parents say, do you know what? If you've got that child sat there, you could watch a video about something, or if you know that something's happening in their week, you could talk about it there and then. So it's just finding those little moments in the everyday. But it's the families are the ones who know where those moments are. So doing some of the resources that we've got and allowing parents to think, okay, where have I got these pockets of time, is really helpful. And we want to champion parents, because actually a lot of parents are doing a really good job, but they just don't know. I was thinking about, we want to encourage parents to go on a faith journey with their kids. You know, Andy Frost has written a book for the Kitchen Table Project called 52 Faith Adventures for Dads with Their Kids. And like, we really want to encourage parents to say, we're going to learn together. When parents say that they're not a good example, we want to encourage them that actually, do you know what? You are God-placed. God knew that those children were going to be yours, you know. And just as in what you do in your work, you are placed divinely by God in that community for those children. So we want to like replicate that with parents and say, you are divinely placed to nurture these children. And when parents said, you know, I'm not qualified, I've not been to a parent school. I'm not sure what parent school would look like. But actually, it's saying, do you know what? As a parent, you encounter God. And just teach that, like, don't be afraid to show that to your kids. You know, don't be afraid to say, I was really thinking about that, and I'm going to spend some time before I come and pick you up and pray about it. You know, like, create those spaces as parents. That's what we encourage. You know, we don't need to know all the answers, but as church community and as parents engage with each other, they can learn from each other. What a lovely environment. Ooh, I feel like I've said so many words. So we really want to help parents to connect with each other, and like our courses like Inspire create those opportunities. So over to you, Gaz.
Yeah, and it's all along, like, we asked those why questions, and we asked what is important in our lives. And I don't know about you, maybe it's me being a little bit honest, that sometimes there's a disconnect between what I think is important and the reality of life. So I might say this is where I'm heading and this is what I believe is important, but because of the strains and pressures of life and actually the busyness of things, the reality looks very different to the goal. And that's why these hurdles and really coming alongside parents and going, do you know what? Life is busy. You might not feel qualified. You might not feel an expert. You might mess up yourself, but do you know what? The goal is still the same. That actually it's still keep going. And I think that's the greatest message that we as the church that can come alongside parents and actually help families realize that it's not always going to be plain sailing, that there are hurdles. And the way I often think about our role as the church, and there's many things that we do well as the church. We put on great provisions, and I love provisions. I'm a local church leader, and myself and my wife are in the process of planting church at the moment. And we believe passionately in children's ministry and youth ministry and the church. But I also think one of our key roles is that actually we're called to coach and called to champion parents and families in the ups and downs of life. There are hurdles that our parents will face, and we as the church cannot remove those hurdles. We can't suddenly go, bam, there's more time for you as a family. But we can actually go, there's a hurdle and there's an obstacle of time that life is busy. Do you know that it's not about adding more things into the busy to-do list. It's actually about recognizing that God can be involved in every aspect of our life. And when we change the narrative and actually encourage parents, it's not about adding more into our lives. It's not about waiting until we're perfect to do this, but it's actually learning on the job, so to speak. Suddenly that takes off the pressure. So we can't remove the hurdles for our family, but we as the church are positioned to help them overcome them. I love watching the Olympics. And what I love is that actually every athlete, whatever they're doing, whether it's shot put, whether it's the hurdles, whether it's swimming, they all have a coach. And often I watch the coach as much as I watch the athlete. Why? Because the coach is actually not physically running the race, but in their head they're running the race with them. And often you'll see the athletes walk the track with the coach before, and they're looking at the track and they're going, remember what you got to do on that turn. Remember what you got to do at that jump. But they can't walk up to the race and suddenly remove all the hurdles. That wouldn't go down well. But what they can do is help the athlete overcome them. And then win, lose, or draw. Arm around the shoulder and go, do you know what? It maybe didn't go the way you thought it was going to go. But we've learned a lot. And what a powerful illustration for us as the church to come alongside parents and go, well, that didn't work. Or maybe that didn't go the way we thought it was going to. But come on, we're still in this. We're still in this together. How can we as the church help champion, encourage our families? And around this, what's important in our life, and we love this scripture. And like we said, in the third session especially, we're gonna get some practical on this. We're going to do some interactivity and some group work and dive into some of this. And we will dive into this scripture. But we love this scripture. It's Deuteronomy 6, verse 4. Let me read it to us. It says, fix these words of mine in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. I love that scripture for many reasons. Some of those reasons are this. First one is, says, teach them to your children. But when I think of Moses talking about this, I don't think it always looked like sitting in nice little rows and going, let me teach you. I think a lot of the teaching was actually walking along the road. A lot of the teaching was actually when you're getting out of bed and, do you know what? Everyone's a little bit grumpy at morning time, aren't they? But there's a lot can be learned in those moments of life. And the next thing I love about this is, Moses is not telling the people to do things extra. He's actually helping them recognize that God can be involved in every aspect of our life, in the everyday moments. Do the parents, carers, families we work with on our church recognize that God can be involved in every aspect of their life? God is present when we worship on a Sunday. God is present when we sit down and read the Bible together. For God is as present as we're walking to the park. God is as present as when you're watching Peppa Pig. I don't think Peppa knows Jesus, but he is present. But it's not about, she does need Jesus. Should we pray for Peppa? No. Can we all stand? No. It's funny how little things knock you off. I blame COVID, okay? I blame the pandemic. But it's the everyday moments. It's helping parents realize it's not waiting for this perfect Instagrammable moment. It's actually about the mess. It's about the chaos. What I always laugh is that I started this job with Care for the Family 3.5 years ago. And the purpose of my role is specifically to come alongside churches to equip parents, to help them make the most of the everyday moments, to build faith at home, to actually learn together. And what's funny is at that point, our little girl was maybe like 3. And we came home, and I would say that as parents, we were doing a pretty good job. We'd pray together. We'd go to church together. We'd sing songs, and that's brilliant. And what's funny is that I thought this whole idea of building faith had to look a certain way, because I see the perfect Instagrammable moment of the perfect family all smiling, praying together. And I'm like, oh man, my family look nothing like that. And I remember getting home and we're sitting around the dinner. And remember, our project is called the Kitchen Table Project. And I was like, okay, everyone around the table. And my wife's like, okay, what's going on? Like, so I was like, everyone sit around, and I got the Bible out, and this is good. I'm not saying this is wrong, by the way. It's good to read the word together. But I'm sitting there, and my three-year-old's looking at me. My wife's looking at me. I'm like, and to be honest, we're all a bit hungry. But I was like, we're not eating yet. We are sitting down together, and we're going to read the word together, which is a good thing, by the way. It's really good. But maybe not before dinner time. So we're doing it. And I'm reading, and my wife is getting a bit like, what is going on? What's happening? We never do this. We normally act out the Bible, not read it, like sitting down. But I was like, Maxie, because she was like playing around. I was like, Maxie, sit there. Maxie's my daughter, not my wife, by the way, just so you know. And I'm sat around the table, and because in my mind, it had to be this perfect God moment for God to be able to meet our family that we could grow together. And I don't know who wanted to hit me first, my wife or my little girl, if I'm honest. Because the reality is, in most families, it doesn't look like that. Do you know where I have the best conversations with my little girl is? It's not after church on a Sunday when I've just preached. Because often I sit in the car and go, Macy, what did you think of Daddy when he said? She's like, oh, it was a bit boring. Or, Dad, do you always have to tell that story about me? It's never about the power of what the Holy Spirit has done in people's lives. Do you know where the best conversations we have? Is while we're watching Peppa Pig. Is when Peppa is not being very nice to George. And we get to talk about kindness. We get to talk about how we treat other people. But do you know why we often miss those moments? It's because we are so transfixed by the busyness of life and the way we think it should look, we miss the everyday moments. The everyday moments of at the park. The everyday moments of when the parents we work with are taking their kids to school and the child just says, I'm a bit worried about today. But we're so busy because we're thinking, oh man, I'm going to miss. I'm going to be 2 minutes late for work. I'm going to be 2 minutes late for the drop off. That we miss the moment just to say a little prayer together. So how can we help our families recognize the importance of the everyday? And we're going to dive into that in the a little bit later. But one of the ways we can do that is helping our parents build confidence, helping them overcome the hurdles, help them realize that God has positioned them and equipped them to be able to teach and raise their children. Will it be easy? No. Will it look hard? Will it look as if some days it doesn't go to plan? Yeah, of course it will. But what are some of the practical things that we as the church can do to help our families recognize firstly what's important in their life, the value, but also how they can outwork that in the everyday? And a couple of quick practical things that we as the church and children's workers can do is recognize this whole idea of parenting. And again, we're talking about within the church in this context as ministry. We have ministries for everything in our church. I drove past a church the other day and they had a big banner going, bring your pets to church this Sunday. So we even have pet ministry. But do the parents in our churches realize that parenting is a ministry? Parenting is a God-given gift. Why I say that is because otherwise, if we always place the emphasis on everything else, we actually feel a bit guilty as parents sometimes. We actually think, oh man, I should be at this, I should be at that. And it's great to be involved and it's really important to. But actually for me, in everything I do, I count this one of the greatest privileges that I get to do is to encourage people like you. I really do. Last Sunday night, I said we're church planting and we did our second gathering up in Risca where we're planting. And we met with people and it was amazing to meet people who didn't know Jesus, meet people we didn't know. And I loved that. I love that I get to meet amazing people, that I get to work for an amazing organization like Care for the Family. But do you know what my greatest joy will be? And tomorrow I'm going up to Leeds to meet with a church. Do you know what my greatest joy will be on Thursday evening when I hopefully get home before bedtime, where I get to play? But it's had to be a journey for me because so often, I'll be honest, I prioritize everything else, the ministry. Oh, this is great. I love to encourage. I love to speak. I love to do this. But the greatest people I get to disciple is actually my kids. But actually, so often, they're the people I least want to disciple because they see the best and the worst of me. And that's a little bit scary. But also, that's an amazing opportunity because it's not about being perfect. So how can we help even ourselves and the parents we work with realize it's not about being perfect, but recognizing it as a ministry, you can see those couple of bits that it helps. It gives value, it shows investment, it empowers parents. The second one, which I think really helps, is remove the sense of an expert culture. We talked about one of the hurdles being not feeling qualified or not sure where to start. So often when we talk about this whole idea of building faith at home, we think it's about replicating church on a Sunday in our home. Because you're the experts as church and as children's workers, so I'm going to do what you do. But it doesn't work like that. So actually it's removing, and I think that excellence is really important in everything we do. But there's a difference between being excellent and being an expert. We're not asking our parents to be experts or perfect. We're actually going, hey, let's learn from our mistakes. So how can we help the families we work with not see what we do as being unattainable, if that makes sense? So removing, because that actually builds pressure, that builds guilt, that builds, oh man, I'm not as good as that children's worker. So again, the goal suddenly becomes, I need to get my kids to church. And again, that's really important. Rather than going, what are the opportunities that we can do at home? All right, I need to whiz through these. Dispelling the guilt talks for itself. As the church, we're positioned to actually speak life into people's lives. We're able to speak truth in. How can we remove the pressure and the guilt of families' lives? Help parents to take the lead. Whether we like it or not, we're partnering with parents. Actually, what we get to do, going back to that pie chart, is actually a lot about how we can make the opportunities to equip them to make the most of the rest of the circle. So have we ever taken a moment, and I know life is busy, I know we all don't get to do this, but to talk to parents, to go, what are the challenges you're facing? What are the kind of things your kids are talking to, or you're talking to your kids at home? Help them feel part of what you're doing on a Sunday, and helping them feel that they're part of what we get to do. For me, this is the game changer, and it's probably the simplest thing, and that's why I love it. Is because it's encouraging parents to see the simple things they can do in everyday life. Nothing is too simple. We often think we go straight back to the how. I need this big master plan that my children are going to do, and there's time for that. But I think it's often about the simple things. And what an encouragement to parents to come alongside them and go, you're probably doing more than you think you are. But you don't always recognize that is equipping or discipling. Talking on the way to school, praying together. My little girl, she's 6 and a half now, and especially when she was younger, she wasn't the kind of child who would just sit there and read stories. And she'd be like, oh, Dad, this is like, why? But do you know what she loves to do is act out stuff. She's very much like her mum, because I'm a very reserved person, whereas my wife's very out there. But what's really funny is my little girl would love to act out Bible stories. You know what her favourite Bible story to act out is? Actually walking on the water. Not because of the powerful truths of trust or obedience or faith when there's storms coming. Do you know why it's her favourite Bible story? It's because she does it in the bath. And it makes the bath very, very wet. Makes the bathroom very messy. And do you know why she likes that story? Not just because the bathroom gets messy. It's because it gets me into trouble with my wife. Because every time my wife comes up and goes, you're walking on water again, Macy. Because it's going everywhere. But what? I have not met an adult who knows that story better than my six-year-old. Why? Because in the play, because in the craziness, God is speaking to her. Why? Because in the immersion of doing it together, she's understanding there's truths there. So it's making the most of the simple everyday moments. Start conversations between parents. Parenting is lonely. Life is lonely, not just for parents. And the last 2 years has probably escalated that. And so often our lives have revolved about everything at home. How can we help parents have conversations? How can we help facilitate opportunities for parents to be intentional in those conversations? Okay, I'm going to whiz past that, and I'm just going to pass over to Ima just to help us land on a couple of practical things that can help build faith in the next 10, 12 minutes.
So what builds faith? I do love prayer, but I actually heard a guy who leads a whole prayer ministry, and he said, do you know what? My mum used to get us all praying, and he said he used to think, oh my goodness, why do I have to do it? And he said, my mum wouldn't just let you pass up and say, oh no, I've got nothing to say. They had to go around the whole family and everyone had to pray. And so he grew up in that culture, in their family culture, where for his mum, prayer was really important. And he said, do you know what? Sometimes I would hear my mum praying. And he said, when you hear someone doing something that you think you probably should do, he said, I did always know that I probably should do, but I didn't. So all through his life, he was a bit like, I'm not that fussed about prayer. I didn't really want to engage with that. But because he always saw his mum praying and it was in the culture of their home that prayer was valuable, when he actually got to university age, God did something in his whole life to the point that he's now like running a movement that is all about prayer. So kind of for our parents, just letting them know, do you know what? If you know it's valuable and important, just keep doing it. Little and often. Doesn't have to be praying for 6 hours, unless you can do that. But it's just that little and often. You know, we're talking today about like family values and what's important in each family, and that is different for each family. But you grow up in a family and you're used to that culture and you see different things. So there is also the fact that actually when we think about what builds faith, there's five things in total. So in the research, so in that research leaflet, in that research booklet, there's five things that actually build faith. You know, it's prayer, it's being intentional, it's belonging, being real, and it's also home. And Gaz, when you were just talking then, it just reminded me of thinking about home. One of the saddest funerals I ever went to was a funeral where I knew someone from a church setting, so I had a particular opinion of him. And then when his son came to speak and do kind of what you would think was the eulogy, it was so sad because this parent didn't know what we're talking about today. You know, we're going to talk about like home and creating a home where children feel affirmed and loved. And he hadn't created that. So as his son got up to talk about his dad and his home life, it was a shock. And people in this room that I had known, you know that uncomfortable feeling where you go, oh my goodness. It was just so sad, because if he'd have known what we want our parents to engage with, that actually just by creating a home where your children feel safe and loved and heard and understood, that is nurturing their faith. That is giving them a picture of what the Father God is like. So as well, in the home, there's unique opportunities that don't exist anywhere else. You know, kind of in our home, there was particular smells, and it'd be like, oh, it's this. And we're like going, oh, I want that. I want this. I want that. There's stuff that you can cultivate in your home because you all know each other and you all connect that you can't do like in this context or on a Sunday morning. So we want parents to know that investing in that and knowing how each child is and putting that into your home and making sure that if they've had a rough day, they can come and come home and it's a safe place, a safe space. And we don't always get it right. Like I was saying, sometimes you are really rushing, but actually just being able to say, it's okay, I'm sorry, I was wrong, I'm ready to listen, is really helpful. And we as parents can be praying for our children, and for those that aren't parents, but you know those children in your context, you can be praying for them. You know, you don't have to know every situation, but I do think that actually the people that prayed for me as I were growing up, I'm so grateful. Like, do definitely just pray for those in your context. Thinking of prayer, I know kind of a family, and in their culture, they do, at bedtime, they do a particular blessing every single night. And those children have heard that blessing from when they first came home to like to now, like one's the oldest one's 13 and the other one's 10. But they do that as a prayer and as a blessing. So it might be, you know, like within your context, you might have families who are from different cultural backgrounds and they're happy to do what that person that I mentioned before saying, they all go around the family and pray. Or it might be actually that just on the in the car, so no one's looking at each other, then encouraging families to pray.
Yeah, and what we're going to do in the third session especially is we're going to put some practical ideas and tangible things. What we want to do in this first session is open the conversation and kind of maybe even leave you with more questions than answers, to be perfectly honest, to kind of go, oh, how could that look? Oh, I'm not sure if I agree with that, and that's okay. But really go, okay, how can we outwork this? Because for all these elements, there are some really tangible things. How can we help equip parents? How can we put some tangible foundations in our children's ministry? And what I love about that home is every home is different. And the homes that we work with, the families we work with, represent so many different cultures. And we should celebrate that. And what I love about going back to earlier about the how versus the why, when we focus on the how, we always go to the practical sides. And actually, it's not a one size fits all. And yes, we want to equip. But when we get to the why do we do this? Then actually, that's what really bubbles from deep within and goes, okay, how can we do this practically? And it's helping families realize there are opportunities that exist at home. And then the, I suppose, third thing that builds faith, and this isn't in any particular order, it's about the idea of belonging. We love to use the phrase, joining the dots between church and home. The church has a massive part to play in children's faith. The church has a massive part to play in families' lives. And this idea of belonging, and I think this is a really important value for children, that children and young people want to belong, that they want to find a safe place. They want to find a space where they can be themselves, where they feel safe and part of what we do. And I ask this question all the time. Do the children that we work with in our churches realize that it's their church, or do they think it's just mum, dad's or nanny or granddad's church? Because especially at the young age, the way they perceive church is how they perceive God. So if they think it's just mummy's church, they'll often think it's just mummy's God. So how can we create opportunities that families belong together? And this is where the idea of intergenerational ministry and that the wider church family comes in. We have a friend, Phil, and he's like 28-year-old single guy. He's our youth worker at church. And he spends a lot of time with our family. And just maybe 2 years ago, before COVID, my little girl was telling me her birthday list about 6 months before her birthday. Basically, that involved of people she wanted to invite to her party. And it was a list of mainly girls from school and church, like four-year-olds, five-year-old girls. And she's right. She's shouting the names list, like Lily, Martha, whoever they were. And then at the end, she was like, Dad, write this in big. And I'm like, oh no, what's this going to be? And she said, Phil. And Phil is my mate, who's 28, like I said. But she was like, you make sure that Phil's name's on the list. I didn't even make the list. What is going on? Maybe I'm not doing a good job at this. Maybe don't listen to me when it comes to this. I'm not making an impact. But she was like, Phil. And do you know why Phil was on the list? Because Phil sometimes picks her up from school. Phil comes over and has dinner with us. Phil in church on a Sunday, even though when everything else is going on, he'll come over and play with Macy. So in Macy's mind, Phil's part of the family. In my mind, Phil's part of the family. And research shows that when other adults are involved in our children's lives, and of course it's trusted adults, and I get that, but when they're in there, that helps build a foundation. Why? Because they realize it's not just mum and dad who are on this trail, that we're all part of this. And I don't have all the answers. There's many times, there's a running joke, I'm part of the eldership team in our church. There's many times where Macy, and again, she's only 6 and a half, asks a question, I go, don't ask me, Macy, ask one of the other elders. Why? Because we're in this together. The wider church family, belonging is important. Okay, I need to really finish up on these two things very, very quickly. We'll end on be real. Be intentional. Finding simple ways to involve God naturally in everyday life encourages children to know and love him. We're intentional about everything in our lives. We're intentional about meal planning, eating healthy, maybe going to the gym, planning for that holiday whenever we can actually leave and go on holiday. But we often think that faith's just going to happen by accident. But it's helping our parents realize it's being intentional. It's making the most of those everyday moments. And the great thing is, and again, it's not about putting pressure, but the great thing is our kids watch everything. So it's helping our parents realize that we have an opportunity just in how we model life. So take a moment. And I love, again, Macy, she would love to come weekly shopping with me to Aldi's. And we would just be doing the shopping and there would be this guy outside Aldi's who was homeless. And every time we'd go, like many people, I would just go, hey mate, do you want any food? And what was really funny was a couple of weeks after we were doing that, Macy, we would be going into Aldi's, she would jump out of the trolley and she'd go, hey mate, do you want any food? Would say exactly what I would say. Did I sit her down and go, Macy, in order to be kind, this is what we do. No, she just saw it modeled. And it works both ways. There's been many times where she's modeled behavior that she shouldn't be modeling because she's watched her mum do it. But there's been many moments. But it's about actually taking a moment and going, oh yeah, Macy, that was good. Macy, let's pray for him. What was funny was a week after, first when I noticed that we're going to Morrison's to pick up some milk, and we're just going in, and she jumped out of the trolley, shouted at this man outside and went, hey, mate, do you want any food? The problem was he was just waiting for his wife to pick him up from shopping. So we then had to have a conversation. Macy, not every person who hangs around a supermarket needs our money. But it's about being intentional. And let me just end on this. And I know we are literally going up to the wire, but I want to finish on this one. And we'll land and be practical later. But what builds faith, be real. It's not about being experts. It's not about parents being perfect. But it's living out faith in a genuine way inspires children to want it for themselves. What a message. If you go away with one thing, let that be our message to our parents. It's not about being perfect. It's not about being experts, but it's about being authentic. And let me just quickly tell you this last story. Is this whole idea of being real. I don't like being real. I don't like it because I like being able to pretend. I could be stood up here and my literally arm could be aching. I could have a headache, but you wouldn't have a clue because I'm good at acting. I'd be here smiling, pretending like everything's okay. And we do that well. And we often think in our own families that we have to pretend everything's okay to our children. And we often want to shelter our children from the realities of life. And I get it. And obviously there's age appropriateness to this. And it's not about suddenly going home and shattering a three-year-old's life with the reality of life. But it's also about helping our families realize we don't have to hide who God is. That God is faithful, but like Rob spoke last night, sometimes we go through it. It doesn't always go around it. So how can we help our kids realize that? And just a couple of years ago, my father-in-law led a large AOG church down in Dagenham in Essex. And we live in Wales, and we were going on a big cruise in October with the family. So we were so excited to see him. And we're just FaceTiming him and my mother-in-law on the Monday. And we're so excited about the cruise. My little girl would call her granddad her friend. And she couldn't say granddad, so she would say my friend. And the day before, me and my wife had found out that we were having our second child. So we were so excited to tell the family. We didn't tell anyone. We were waiting for the cruise to tell them they were having a second grandkid. So we're so excited. FaceTime on the way home from work at 7:30. And they had just been in London for my sister-in-law's birthday, and just a normal Monday. That night we went to bed, and then my phone rang at 11 o'clock at night, and I remember looking at it, and it was my sister-in-law. In about 8 years of marriage at that time, I don't think my sister-in-law has ever called me. So I woke my wife up and said, it must be for you. And Hannah said, Lois, put Gaz on the phone. So woke me up, because I fell asleep in that minute again. I fell back asleep. And my sister-in-law said, hey, Gaz, you need to get down to London now because Dad's just been rushed into hospital. So I'm like, what the heck? So I was like, Lois, we need to go. Didn't really know the details. We thought we were going to the hospital. So we left Macy at home, obviously not on her own, so don't tell social services. But we got in the car. And if you know the M4 motorway at all, we're driving at about midnight. It's pouring it down with rain. It's pitch dark. And we're by the Swindon turning. And we're in the car, and it was quite hopeful. We're listening to music. My wife's talking, because we're going to the hospital. But then the phone rang. Have you ever had those moments where you know what's coming, but the person you're with has no clue? This is probably the scariest moment of my life. My sister-in-law goes, hey, Gaz. I don't like those phrases, hey, Gaz. You know something's going. She goes, can you talk? So we pulled over on the hard shoulder of the M4, pouring it down with rain. And my sister-in-law goes, hey, Dad hasn't made it. My wife heard it. She opened the door. Oh, my goodness, I haven't told this story for a little while. Oh, you used to tell the story all the time. Flipping COVID's got in the way, isn't it? My wife ran up the hard shoulder, threw herself in the road because her life had been turned upside down, had been totally shattered. Managed to get in the car, rang some friends of ours, and they're praying over us as we're driving the rest to London. We got to London and then did that, and then we got home. And the week of the funeral, and everyone was saying to my little girl, this is why I'm so passionate about what we're talking about today, because our children take in so much. God wants to speak to a 3-year-old as much as he wants to speak to a 33-year-old. God can do something powerfully, and we have such an opportunity with our kids we work with. And the week of the funeral, we're at home. Again, I hate being real. I'm not very good at it. And my wife is crying on my shoulder. I'm trying to be there. Sorry, I know we're over. I will literally wrap up. I'm sorry, I know we're time over. Okay. And I'm trying to be real. I'm trying to be there for my wife. And she's crying on my shoulder. And my little girl's upstairs playing. And I hear her running down the stairs. And I thought, I have two thoughts I can do. The first thought I can do is pull myself together and close the door on my wife in the living room. Let her carry on crying because Macy doesn't need to see mummy and daddy upset. And I'd be like, come on, Macy, let's go play Barbies because I can do that good. But then the second thought I can do is just go, come on, Mace, like everything's okay. Look, mummy's all right. Life's good. God is good. What's funny is before I could even do any of those things, Macy came running in, jumped on top of us, pulled us together, and this is what she did at 3 and a half. Said, in her own words, I said, Jesus, mummy really, really, really sad. My friend not here no more. My friend, granddad, help her, amen. And then went running off and said, Daddy, I need some yogurt. The reason why I say this is because if we can help our parents and help our families realize that there is so much that can happen in the reality of life, in the ups and downs of life. It's not about just sheltering our kids. It's actually realizing, yeah, do you know what, Mace? We have many questions. Do you know what? That hurt like anything. We don't know why, but God is still good. Do you know what that little 3.5-year-old seen? That on the following Friday or Saturday, whenever it was, on the front row, she looks over and sees her nanny, her auntie, and her mum singing It Is Well With My Soul. What the heck? Was it well with our soul? No. But here's our prayer. Is when Macy's 12 and maybe worried about going up to high school, she realizes she can fall on her knees and cry out to her loving God. When she's 20 and a bit worried about whether it's university or work or career or things like that, she realizes she can cry out to a loving God and he hears her prayer. When she's 30 and has kids of her own, maybe, and realizes that parenting isn't always easy, she realizes that God hears her prayer. But she needs to learn it somewhere and she needs to see it modeled. And I believe that home is a great place that can happen. And so often we want to shelter things and we want our kids to not always know that God doesn't answer every prayer like we think he should. Reality is, we didn't even get to pray for my father-in-law because it happened. And God, I believe God can heal. I believe God can do that. But not every prayer we pray will answer how we think it should. So how can we help our children realize that? Because that's what builds foundations. And we believe in this. And we're going to touch on how some practical things we can do that. And please, like Ima said, we're here all day. We'll happily talk. We'll happily grab a coffee. We don't have all the answers. But we just would love to equip and encourage you. And I hope that even just in this last hour, you've heard our heart a little bit. That actually this is a journey that we as the church are positioned. And just in summary, some of the things we've touched on is we believe that parents are positioned for influence. They don't always feel like they're positioned. They don't always feel they're equipped because they have hurdles to overcome. But we as the church are positioned to help build parents' confidence and help them overcome the hurdles. And there's loads of different ways, and we're going to touch on them later. Let me leave this as I hand it back to Martin with John Wesley. John Wesley said this, "I learned more about Christianity from my mother than all the theologians in England." My prayer is that Macy and Hudson, as they grow older, they'll probably write a lot of stories about me and their mum, which didn't go well. And that's okay. We know we're not perfect. But my hope is that through the ups and downs of life, through the realities, through the mistakes, through the good times and the not so good times, they'll say, "I saw Jesus in their life." Are we perfect? No. Do we get it right all the time? No. But we're on a journey. Because why? We're starting to think about that why, not just the how. So I pray that it's kind of been helpful today, that there's some encouragement there. But we are going to dive into this. And we're going to hear a bit from you later, which you'll be glad to know, that it'll be less about me and Ima. It'll be more about your questions and thoughts. But thank you, guys. It's been a pleasure.